C1S. Number 20A.
The second subtone I try to epitomize by saying that the Christ Spirit overcomes all material resistance. You feel at once in this short epitome that what Mrs. Eddy wants to show here, the fact in being, that the life power is so strong, so powerful, that matter cannot resist the impulsion of life. It is especially here where she speaks about evolution. It is showing that matter can make no obstacle to the ever-unfolding spiritual sense of life, and that the whole evolution lies in spiritual evolution, and that matter has to submit to the impulsion of life. She starts first with the false sense of spiritual life, namely with the Jewish concept, which was limited and material, that the Jewish concept of God was a material concept, a personal concept of Jehovah as a mighty hero, as a person. The ritual worship was mostly material, outward, and not spiritually inward. Therefore, it was that material sense of being and of life which objected to Jesus' spiritual sense of life, to Jesus' sense that he made himself equal with God. See again the touch of the Immanuel, the unity, that which enrages material sense is that spiritual unity, that conscious communion with God, that unity of Immanuel, where we begin to see that God and man is one, the principle and idea is one, and this one God, that there is no distinction between God and man in a quantitative or spiritual way, that God and man is one in quality. If we feel that, as Mrs. Eddy says here, that Jesus founded his mission on spirit, on the understanding that he has had no life, intelligence, nor substance separate from God, that his substance, his intelligence, his truth, his life was God himself, that this enraged the Jewish concept, the material concept. Well, it doesn't only enrage the Jewish concept, it enrages in the whole world the concept of material-mindedness. And therefore we have what she shows afterwards, the persecution of material sense of life towards that spiritual sense of life. But what she wants to show really is that this material sense of life, persecuting the spiritual sense of life, has no success, cannot succeed, that life in and of spirit, the life power which says, I have found myself on spirit, and spirit is the true nature, and in that true nature, God and nature is one, in that true nature, therefore, we feel that we are God in action, God in expression, God in operation, that this is such a life power that every resistance, every material resistance, be it material reasoning or the concept of material law, like material evolution, must yield. She shows that it yields in the mental way, in material reasoning, that human doctrines never could stand in time of troubles, that only the Christ Spirit is strong enough to be able to stand the attacks of mortal mind. But also she shows that the life spirit is that which is enacting the true laws of nature. The laws of nature which, from a material standpoint, are called miracles. The whole part of theology really is dealing a lot with the question of miracle and showing that miracles are natural and not supernatural, that miracles from the point of view of God are just the natural order of spirit, and that only the material mindedness, that which does not want to accept the life spirit, that for that state of thought miracles are supernatural, but that they are really supremely natural for the spiritual mindedness. So we have here that sentence that there is divine authority for believing in the superiority of spiritual power over material resistance. And then later on, that sentence which I have quoted over and over, spiritual evolution, that's on page 135.9, spiritual evolution alone is worthy of the exercise of divine power. I have perhaps a certain liking for evolution. I don't know why. It always intrigues me. I think because it shows the impersonality of life in and of spirit, because evolution is that process of evolution which has gone on before man existed, and therefore proves that it is a power in and of itself. It is quite interesting really to see that a higher sense of evolution only broke in really, I would say, when John Dolittle began to see the spiritual evolution, the spiritual order of the 7 days of creation. Up to that point, it is really only a reason, we find in the world very little indication that the world looked at evolution in any other way but materially. So that the awakening which we find today in the world, that people and scientists from the natural science part begin to look at evolution a bit different than just a pantheistic evolution, just a evolution of matter, is really indicating that something is going on in this present stage which is of highest import. You know that really the sense that the world has been made in a mythological way or through a false interpretation of the first record of creation, that the world as it is, the material world as it is, with all its pieces and so on, has been the act of God, who in one go, anyway, immediately, has created things as we have them today. The beasts and the flowers and the fishes and the birds and men and so on. And that this has never been questioned until at the beginning perhaps of 1810 with the French naturalist Lamarck. He only was the very first one who began to think that there was a material evolution. Up to that point, one not even thought of a material evolution. It was just created, and so it was, finished. And Lamarck, really, in 1800, roundabout, was the first one to question that and to feel that there was a material evolution. Well, then we had Darwin just before Mrs. Eddy discovered Christian Science, when was it, 1859, I think, he wrote his fundamental books, and that sense of evolution again was very much material and materialistic, and afterwards found out, except for one point I think to be wrong, but that doesn't matter. And at the beginning of this century, I think, as far as I know, it's the first one, the French naturalist Bergson, who thought that there also is a spiritual element in evolution, that there must be a life law functioning in evolution. But he didn't really contribute anything how this life force was intermingling with the material evolution. And then only that when the Dutch botanist De Vries one day noticed that there is a phenomena in the world of the flowers which was not known, which is called mutation, that then only one began to realize that there must be some other power at work which is breaking the belief of Darwinism. You know, De Vries was the man who began to see that new species, as well in the, you call it the vegetable world, no, yes, as well as in the animal world, that new species were coming to being suddenly, spontaneously, not as a development, a slow development out of the old forms of life, but that really creation and the diversification of life is something that is not coming out of the old by developing to higher forms, but that suddenly, as a mutation, as a sudden change, something completely new comes into being, which is hereditary, which goes on and on and on in the higher form. And so only that was in 1925, in the same year really, where in physics one had discovered the quantum theory, namely that in the subatomic field everything happens by spontaneity, not by process. And so in the same year, in two different fields, in the fields of evolution and in the fields of physics, was found out the same thing, namely an indication of a law of life existing which is creating anew, which is not developing from one form to the other, but which is spontaneous and is able to bring forth completely new forms of organic life, forms which had not existed before. That was only 1925. I think it's only, how much, 40 years ago. You see, think of all those hundreds and thousands of years where mankind was thinking that the world has been created by an act of God, just as it is, and that it hasn't changed. And only since 40 years one began to fathom that there is a different law at work in being, as well in the evolutionary being, as well in the realm of dead matter as organic matter. And naturally we know that that is true in the realm of spirit. That in the realm of spirit, we are not drawing our life or our inspiration or our knowledge or our truth or anything from what we have known before, from that which has been told of old. But that new vision is possible, spontaneous, right, in split seconds, and something new. Well, I said that really only when John Dolly began to see the order of the days of creation and as an a spiritual evolution, that then the world responded on to that sense. Namely, it was only afterwards, during the First World War, a few years before, during the First World War, that these new theories of evolution came to notice by the physicists. Perhaps you have heard of the French Jesuit Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, a man that has a very high standing in the scientific world as a panteologist, you know, and he has developed a theory of evolution which is partly pantheistic, but not remaining pantheistic, but in which he sees that a spiritual law was working right from the beginning in matter, through matter, but he sees that it is developing to a point where it is free from matter, so that only the spirit develops. But I don't want to go into his theory, although it's very interesting, but it's interesting to, I think, just as coincidence to see that when a new idea is born spiritually, like the true evolution, spiritual evolution, as John Dolly could see through the days of creation, that the world of natural science reacts on it unconsciously and begins to pick up the spiritual thread, though they may not be able to voice it in its purity, but begin to lift up an old concept into a better or higher one. It is also a few years afterwards that really Le Comte de Nuit wrote his book on human destiny, in which he gives a new theory of evolution, which I feel has a much higher sense than Teilhard de Chardin's sense of evolution. Though de Nuit was a natural scientist, he began to realize, as you know, that it was the interaction of the anti-chance, as he calls it, and he said you can also call it God, that can only explain the mutations that were going on. That you remember that he shows through seven stages the evolution from the first living cell up to conscious man having spiritual ideas and moral qualities, that every time a mutation in this evolution was being noticed, that it couldn't be explained by natural science, that it always went against the laws of natural science. And from that he concluded that there must be a life principle at work which is superior to the material laws. The material laws, by the way, you know that perhaps from your school days, have as their fundamentals the second law of thermodynamics, which says that the whole world goes backward and backward to a state of maximum entropy, namely to a state where everything is inactive, cold, absolute cold, no more motion, no more power, where everything is coming to a dead end, so to say. That's the innate law of dead matter. And in spite of that dead matter law, as I may call it, we can witness the very contrary to it, namely evolution. The creation and formation of higher and higher forms of living life and of conscious life and of spiritual life, which shows that there must be a law which is spiritual, which can break the laws of matter, the very honored laws of the second law of thermodynamics. So that's what I think she wants to show here, that it is the superiority of spiritual power over material resistance. The whole laws of matter are that law of resistance, of material resistance. They resist because the spiritual evolution and say, no, I want to go backward to a state of absolute coldness and balance of power where there is no more action, no more surplus of energy and nothing of that sort, where it's, everything is just dead as a bone. Though we have that law in matter, we witness the very opposite. Why? Because there is a law of life, the life of spirit, what she shows here. I think this is the deeper meaning of the superiority of the spiritual power over material resistance, and then showing that spiritual evolution alone is worthy of the exercise of spiritual power. So that we can know for ourselves and our lives that as we are part of the infinite cosmos and therefore are taking part in the individual, collective and universal and even cosmic beliefs of matter, that something wants to draw us back to a state of maximum entropy, of maximum deadness, so to say. And if we are not aware that we are a spiritual being and that we consciously can counteract that universal and cosmic belief, then in seeing that, we can overcome that material resistance. This is not just a academic question. I think it's a question of life and death for each one of us. Because each one of us really is submitted to the law of matter, which says the moment life goes out of your body, it decays very quickly. It goes very quickly to that point of maximum entropy, where it has nothing in it anymore, which is alive and which is active and powerful and energetic. So, but we want to have a future. Anyway, I want to have one. I don't know about you. But I think that's man, that he wants to have a future, an eternal future. And so, that's what I think anyway, we have to be aware that we are an element of evolution and that we coordinate ourselves, synchronize ourselves with that one spirit, which is life, that we have no other life, substance, intelligence apart from God. And in doing that, we take part in the new sense of evolution, the spiritual evolution, which can break material resistance. If all through the millions of years, the spiritual idea was able to go forward and breaking the resistance of matter, then why shouldn't we individually be able to demonstrate that? And that's what happened with Jesus. I think he was the biggest mutation that has taken place in evolution. The biggest mutation was not when the fishes became animals. From the animals or from the fishes there were birds and so on. But the biggest mutation was Jesus when he broke the old evolution, beginning from the first living cell up to the highest sense of a mortal, and broke that and said, from above, from heaven, as an influx, I broke the line of David. He is a new creature, the Son of God. He broke the line of David. He was not the Son of David. He was not the outcome of a long physical human evolution from the first Homo sapiens up to the mortal as we know him today. He was a mutation, the Son of God, the breaking in. And that's why, quite interestingly enough, both those naturalists which I mentioned, Pierre Teilhard de Chardin and Dunuy, both say that Jesus was the prototype of the future man. that he was the prototype of that man which they counted will take about a billion years to appear. They say it has taken a billion years from the first man up to now, and it will perhaps take another billion or 2 billion years for the prototype as Jesus exemplified it to appear as the general sense of man. Now, they are wrong. Because how can they extrapolate from a material evolution into a spiritual evolution? That's just what science usually, natural science usually does, and that's wrong. This extrapolating of a material law into the spiritual field. That's the new sense of science which we must get. You see, we are impregnated with that old belief that if something has gone on in the law of causality in the past, we just can extrapolate it in the future in order to see how the future will be. It will not be that way, because there is the law of life which says, in a sudden influx, at a sudden moment, I can change the whole thing. Why can't we be such a mutation? There is no reason why we can't be such a mutation. In the very moment we leave the old sense of causality, that we think we can progress into heaven and into perfection by building up slowly and steadily and consequently adding knowledge to knowledge and quality to quality, we may get there. Why not see that we come from God? The whole chapter which we are here under consideration has constantly that sense to come from God. If you read it through, you will come across that coming from God, coming from Prince, from the infinite one in Christian Science comes one principle, and with it the infinite idea, and with that infinite laws and order. It's all coming from. That's the break we make from the innate sense of causality to the new sense of spontaneity, of life. She could see the laws of life, spontaneity, the law of truth, self-realization, self-demonstration, the law of love, perhaps the law of integration, where everything is integrated into a whole, where I'm not just a part of the whole, but where the whole cosmos reflects itself within each idea, within each man. If I see that, I think, and if we are ready for it and receptive for it and let it in and let the possibility be open to us, that we don't shut ourselves to it, that we don't think this is sacrilegious to think that way, but that we are willing to see, no, I am the idea of God. I'm not going to God. God is coming to me. That's the change we have seen after the first four chapters to the second four chapters, that it comes to me. Then I think we can break that material evolution and material resistance. Well, I went off a little bit on this evolution business because... Well, perhaps I shouldn't, but I have a certain liking for it. I think I have a certain liking for it because it's so new in the world.